Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems in the USA. And remember, our goal here through our interviews of all these fascinating and interesting people who are either in manufacturing or supply chain, or today's guest in an operational role that might not be as conventional as some of our other guests. Our goal is really to deliver three things to you. Number one is we want to give you some new insights and ideas that you can use to accelerate some of your operational priorities and improvement projects you've got on the go. We also want you to realize that if you can connect the value that your people bring, that is considered true engagement. So we want to deliver that to you. And then the third thing, of course, is to help you either be more successful in your current role, in your current leadership role, position you for potential future advancement, and basically help you get things done, achieve the results that you want with less stress and aggravation. So today's guest, I've known for about a year and a half now, I think. And like I said, Karen DiCarlo comes from an industry that you might not normally, of course, associate with operations. But what I learned in talking with Karen a number of times is just how much it still applies in terms of the business that she's in. So Karen DiCarlo, I'll read this because I want to make sure I get it right. She earned her Bachelor of Health Sciences degree from the University of Waterloo. She's been with Movati Athletic for 13 years. Her current role is as general manager. And Movati operates 16 full-service health and fitness clubs. And I love it because their focus is on creating a welcoming and comfortable environment where people can meet their health and fitness goals. Karen has worked through and at almost all Movati's locations in a variety of roles. She's worked her way up in the company, and she's found her true passion now in operations as the general manager of one of Movati's clubs. I've had the benefit of a number of in-depth conversations with Karen, and I think you'll like her take and her wisdom on leadership, motivation, engagement, and operational leadership. Welcome to the podcast, Karen.
Wow, that's quite an introduction there.
I know, it's only the highlights. It's only the highlights, Karen. And let's keep with that positive spin at first, because I mean, in a career like yours, you've had a lot of. Let's focus on the good stuff first. Like, what would you say is in one of your roles along the way where, because I always think confidence, true confidence comes from actually accomplishing something, right? Before that, it's just enthusiasm. So. What is a role that you had or a situation that you had that really did turn out quite well, maybe even better than you thought, and it really made you think, I think I got something here. I think I got something.
Well, Greg, it goes back probably about a year and a half ago, actually, or even a year, maybe a little less than that. And I came into the club that I'm at. We've got about 110, 120 staff around that area, and a number of functional leaders who had some tenure in their roles. And obviously, when a new general manager comes in, that there can be obviously some discourse in terms of, you know, the previous leader and now a new leader. And it was often brought to my attention that I had some pretty big shoes to fill from the previous leader who had retired. And so, you know, over the course of a few months, one of my leaders and I really didn't see eye to eye on a lot of kind of my vision, how I wanted the club to run, how I saw our department success. And it was really difficult for me. But when we started getting into performance management and kind of down that roadmap, what really my aha moment was when I had the support of the people above me to kind of performance manage this person. And I think that there were a number of people who were kind of, you know, really supporting me and saying, yeah, it may be just time to let this person go. And I remember going home and thinking, I don't feel good about this. And I didn't understand why. And so sometimes when I don't feel good about something, it starts as a feeling. And what I have to do is find a way to associate that feeling or anchor that feeling with, you know, an actual incident or an actual reason behind it, right? The why behind the what. And what I realized is that I had predetermined the outcome of this person's career and really ultimately their trajectory within our organization. When you predetermine that, it's prejudging, and then everything else that follows really is, it supports that and supplements that. So you don't go into every day with open eyes and thinking, I'm going to be clear because clear is kind. I'm going to allow this person to be who they are. You go in there thinking, let me find reasons to back up what I've already believed or thought or saw. And I really had to stop and check myself and ask myself, am I really allowing this person to grow and succeed, or have I predetermined their success? And am I actually allowing them to own their own success or failure? And so I really stepped back and I looked at the way that I was managing or perhaps even micromanaging and said, you know what? I cannot support or deter from this person's success. I have to allow them to succeed on their own. I have to set the boundaries. I have to set my vision and set my expectations very clearly. And they will determine their outcome over time.
Nice.
And so over time, there was such a huge shift in not only the relationship that I had with this person, but also their performance. And it was the reinforcement that I needed to really define and remember that I own the responsibility of somebody's livelihood. I hold their livelihood in my hands, ultimately, as a general manager. And I have to take that very seriously because it's not about being a leader. It's actually about being responsible. I'm responsible for people and their success. And so it's my job to be able to give them every single tool to succeed and not predetermine what the outcome may be.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good learning. And Karen, it ties in when we do our frontline leadership training program. We talk about the self-fulfilling prophecy, which is sort of the same concept. But I like it how you, and it's important because occasionally in organizations, whether the person is a general manager like yourself or they're an HR director, or even, I guess, a supervisor, is once you put someone on a performance improvement plan, I do it in air quotes, a PIP, it's almost like a foregone conclusion that it's not likely going to work out. And you're right. As soon as you have that mindset, then that's probably going to influence how you treat the person, and you're not even giving them a fair chance. And sort of adjacent to that is this concept of thinking that anytime that I'm providing any kind of what's supposed to be constructive or helpful feedback to make the person more successful, it should always be in the framework of you'll be even better if, you'll be even better when. And then, you know, ultimately, sometimes it won't work out, but often that becomes a conclusion that the person themselves will come to along at the same time as their manager. So I just love the spirit that you brought to that. And you've kind of answered, you know, the other question I was gonna jump to next, which is the challenges. So I'm gonna change tact. I want to go to one of the other questions that I have for you, because I know it also came up in a conversation we've had before. And that is, and I think if people aren't impressed already to think that a health club has 120 staff members and, you know, is this complex, you know, multi-departmental operation, I think you got to get a different perspective on it. But we talked at one point about aligning the departmental objectives, or trying to make sure that departments recognize that they don't operate just in isolation, or, you know, you've got this master vision for the club as a whole, and you really need them to be figuring out how they can contribute to that. You and I had a good exchange about that at one point. I just wondered, what is your view on this alignment between functions or departments? And you want to give an example of that? That would be helpful.
Yeah. So, I mean, in our organization, and specifically in the club that I oversee, we have a number of different what could be considered silos, because they really are a business within the business. So we have, you know, group fitness classes where we run, you know, 180 to 200 group fitness classes a week. And we have a group fitness manager who oversees that. And she oversees 50 instructors, as well as all of the scheduling that goes around that. Now, Then we have our performance coaches and the personal training department, which will have upwards of 20 to 25 performance coaches. And we have a, you know, personal training manager that oversees that. Then we have the operations, which is kind of the downstairs, the membership sales, the service side of it, you know, our service champions, what I like to call our frontline staff. And then we have, you know, the department that keeps our building running, which is our operations manager. So your building, your maintenance, your, you know, custodian team. And each one of those, even though they do work within their own budget and their own silo, without one actually working with another and understanding the objectives of what the other department is trying to accomplish and their pain points or what really prevents them from success, is then you're really just operating five or six different businesses within one. And the goal is for anybody who comes in our club to understand that it should be seamless. Their experience should be seamless from start to finish. It should be consistent. We have a consistent vision of what a member's experience should be like through our club. And that should be regardless of whether it's with one of our custodians or a manager. I actually say that our team is custodians first, because a member will never understand that, you know, whose job is what. It's everybody's job to make sure that the facility is clean. And so we all have to rally around that vision, and we all have to align on that vision. And that starts with the management team, because I have a vision for my team. And then the first thing I'll usually do every year is sit down with my management team and say, what is your vision for your department this year? And we talk about that. And then we talk about what that looks like. What are the top five behavioral traits required in order for them to succeed on their vision? And then how are they going to execute on that vision? And then how do they know that they're succeeding? And how does their team know that they're succeeding? So success is so important, but your team has to know every day when they're succeeding. They can't just wait for that once a year performance review to find out whether they're succeeding or not.
Right. Actually, it's funny because we used to, well, recently we've made a bigger deal of helping your team understand whether they're winning or not. And if they're not winning, what can they do to help make it win? Because people want to win. And I don't mean they want to win at the sake of someone else losing. They just want to feel like they're doing well and they're contributing to something and it's going well. I think, you know, we talk in our courses about the hope slope. Like, you have to give people the sense that, hey, we're striving to make it better. We're making it better. It's not every once in a while there'll be setbacks, but it's really about this journey to success. I also want to go, Karen, to something else that you and I chatted about. I thought you had a great perspective on. You have metrics as a club. Your club, as one of 16 locations, gets, I'm sure, benchmarked against others, and and so you know what you're measured against. And sometimes, you know, one of those things might get highlighted in a campaign or a focus area. But I thought you had an interesting take on that. That it's hard to just run the business focused on that outcome. Do you know what I'm speaking of? Like, how do you sort of take a different perspective? Can you share your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I always think there's the KPIs and the numbers, right? There's the financial health of the business. And of course, that's important. But there's also the cultural side of the business. And, you know, numbers don't drive your business, regardless of what people think. People drive your business.
Right.
And it's the culture, the inside, that creates the brand on the outside.
Right.
And a brand is only as good as the consistency of the culture on the inside. And I like to create inside what I call a cultural bonfire, where, you know, the people come first. Because if you treat your people well and they feel like they're contributing and they know how to succeed, they know when they're succeeding, and they also know when to self-regulate, then what happens is there's this feeling of anchor to a bigger vision. And then you can all rally around that. And then, you know, you don't start asking questions of, oh, can I do this? Should I do this? you have a belief system within your organization that, regardless of hierarchy, that you can anchor to that says, I'm going to make this decision because these are the belief systems within my culture, within my organization, and they will drive decision making. And, you know, one of the key performance indicators I always say is, how many times do people come to an office? How many times are my team, how many times is my team coming to, you know, my office and saying, hey, I was wondering if I could do this. They should be able to walk through that process and know I can do this because it aligns with what the vision is for the company and for how we deliver service to people within that, you know, within our organization. And it starts with the little things of how you treat your team.
Yeah, I would agree. I actually thought, I mean, you went way deeper than what I thought you were going to do on that. I thought you were going to more focus on, you can't just push the numbers without understanding what contributes to the numbers, but you even went to a much deeper level, which is really that it's the culture that sets the stage for the behaviors that ultimately drive and are reflected in the numbers. Like the numbers are what happened. You can't, I always use the analogy, if you said from, you went to either ice hockey or basketball or something, say, okay, guys, we have to just score more points than the other team. That's the key to our success. It's like, okay, so that's the outcome of what we're going to do, but it's all these other things that we do. And you're saying the culture really gives everyone the framework of understanding what those things are, their sense of ownership over those things, knowing what's right and wrong, and doing the right thing more often than not so that the numbers will reflect that. And then I think, as you shared with me before, that has resulted in some really good performance. But again, it's just the makeup of all those little things, right?
Yeah, and I think, you have to be a very confident leader to be able to step back and say sometimes, well, you know what, month over month, you know, we may not be always hitting our goals. I came into a club that was definitely underperforming a little bit. And, you know, it required a lot of time. And I remember I used to say to my team, you know, if the trajectory is up, then you know that you're doing a good job. You know that whatever it is that you're doing in the background to support the team, to lead from the front line, you know that that's right. And I think a lot of new managers come in and, you know, they'll sit and they'll look at a P&L or they'll look at, you know, the numbers or the KPIs and say, oh gosh, I got to change these. But the truth is that they don't get changed by looking at them. They get changed by going out and leading and setting the example of what you want to see.
So let's explore that. I have a question in here around your view of the linkage between the effectiveness of a leader. And I think we can both agree that leadership is a big journey for everybody in a leadership role. It's not a, you know, it's not a one and done. You don't just kind of get it and then coast from there. But when you've seen that light bulb go on with staff members in any of the clubs you've been involved in, how do you help people, I guess, reveal that light bulb that the leadership influences the outcomes?
Well, it requires a lot of time. It's, you know, it's very easy to say, you know, there's empirical evidence that says that if you sell X number of memberships, then you will hit your goal. And here's the outcome of what would happen. It's much cloudier and more challenging to say, okay, I know the numbers may not look great right now, but what I need you to do is I need you to get to know your team. You know, and managers will look at me like, well, but I do know my team. No, I mean, I need you to really get to know your team. I need you to understand what drives them and what drives them nuts. And I need you to find the thing that makes them special so you can allow them to shine. Everybody wants to be recognized for what they're good at. And, you know, the first job of almost any leader is to really dig deep and find out what
those things are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you keep opening up these little avenues for exploration, which I like. Well, let me change gears a little bit. You know, one of the things actually, sorry. No, I'm going to stay on that track for a minute because I'm sure within the health club industry, as there is in all sorts of industries, there is these like, this is the thing. Like you said, this is the thing that will drive membership sales, or this is the thing that will help you sell more personal coaching or training or something. And they drop this initiative, in, almost like a shiny object, and they like, okay, if you just use this system, and you're gonna crush your numbers, right? And in manufacturing, of course, they have concepts like lean and continuous improvement and 5S and all these initiatives. Same principles. Somebody has either wrote a book, created a system, captured the interest usually of someone senior enough in the organization that goes, we need that in every department, or we need that in every club, or we need that in every division of our operations. And that shiny object syndrome, I don't know whether you've witnessed it or not. I'm just, do you have a take on that? Because you tend to have a very holistic view, I think.
I'm not a carrot and stick person, I like to say. I want people on my team who want to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, and they know that over time it will pay dividends. Those dividends aren't immediate. It's not I'm going to do A and B will happen. Usually it's I'm going to do A, B, C, and D times 5/3, and in 6 months, I'm going to see some results from that. And that takes so much leadership courage. It takes a lot of leadership courage to stay on your path and be confident in that path, regardless of what some of the pressures that you're feeling from, because ultimately a large corporation is going to have, people that they have to respond to, whether it's investors or whether it's an equity company. Everybody has somebody that they're accountable to. And so I think that, at the front line, again, it goes back to, do you have the leaders in place? And can you have those honest conversations with them that allow them to stay the course? Like, there's an analogy I use, and listen, I've read a lot of leadership books, and so most of what I say is not mine. It's not something that I've made up.
Right.
That's not who I am. I haven't written any books. I've just, been a leader and made some a
I
lot
think,
of
by the way, Karen,
mistakes.
I think there is something in you about that. That's why I wanted you on the podcast, because you're very humble about, and you're right. I mean, the ideas themselves aren't always new. It's really how much you integrate it into your spirit. But so what, I interrupted your thought there, but in terms
That's
of
okay.
things that you picked up in books and ideas, but what's your thinking on that?
But I often say that, as a leader, you really just have to have a vision, and you have to be able to relay what that vision is. And it's the difference between what I call sweeping and paving as a leader. So, a leader, if you think about, a road, you're trying to create a road to go from A to B. And, as a leader, your job is to ensure that the road is aligned and it gets you to where you need to go. And you have this crew of people who believe in your vision for this road. They believe that you're not going to take them off on these weird turns and twists unless it's absolutely necessary. And your job is to survey and to sweep all the debris out of the way so that all of your team can pave. And that's the way you create a truly visionary, well done road. If you're constantly paving with your team, then what's going to happen is you're always going to get to a point where you're going to get in front of so many rocks that the work will stop. And you'll have to start moving these rocks out of the way again. And it's very stagnant, or that's how people, I think, become stagnant. Stagnant is because they're not looking forward, they're not doing the sweeping. And I think a lot of new leaders think that if their plate is full and they're super busy, that it means that they're doing a great job. And I always say, when somebody comes into my office, if the first words out of their mouth are, I know you're really busy, but I've done a bad job. I've really done a bad job, and I really have to stop and look at myself and say, what am I giving off that's telling people that I'm too busy to actually help them and support them? Because ultimately, as a leader, your job is to actually grow your next you or grow more leaders.
Well, and also, I mean, you pointed out, I was going to ask you about your take on, because some leaders, partly to feel that they're doing something of value, partly to stay busy, partly because they love aspects of the business more than others, is they get into either micromanagement mode, or they're now not necessarily even doing their job. They're now doing someone else's job. I don't know whether you've ever, experienced that yourself, where if you don't catch yourself, you just start doing someone else's job for them, and your job is really to let them do their job. Do you have a comment on that?
I do. So, I'll go back to initially, that performance management, roadmap that I was going down with one of my functional managers. And I mean, ultimately, we did part ways after some time, but I could look at myself in the mirror and I could say that I gave them every tool in order to succeed. I felt so confident the fact that the departure was actually a positive one for this person, because ultimately I knew I had given them every tool. Now, all of that being said, of course, you step back and, I will always ask myself in any situation, no matter what the situation is, I always step back and I say, what part of this do I own? Because there's always got to be a part, because I still have to continue to grow as a leader. Right. I still have to continue to say, what could I have done differently? And so, interestingly enough, I had to look at hiring a new functional manager. And the way that the offices were set up in our organization was the general manager's office had a sliding door, which connected the functional manager's and supervisor's office. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I stepped back and I said, what part of this do I own? What could I do differently moving forward to maybe provide this person with a little more success? And the one thing I started to realize is that as the general manager, sometimes I think we underestimate as leaders the power of our word, the power of our emotions, and the power of what we're giving off, whether it's a smile one day and a frown the next day. It speaks volumes. Everything we do speaks, and people are ultimately always going to be aware of how you come in the building.
Oh yeah, well, they pay attention to that. I think people are surprised at how much people pay attention to even the smallest things that they see and hear their leader say and do. And as the owner of my company, I know that I've got to watch that, because I might be thinking I'm being funny, or I think it's just an offhanded remark, but somebody else might be taking that as a pretty significant either direction or criticism or something. So I agree with you. So that reflection is important.
So we had these two offices that were next to each other, and I thought about it and I thought, how would I feel if the CEO was in the office next to me and could hear every conversation I had with my team? That would put me on edge. I gotta say, that would really put me on edge. And, it would also make me very much question the decisions that I made. And what I realized was, a lot of times my functional manager was making a decision and then kind of turning around for my approval, or doing it with or deferring to me by saying, well, what do you think? And that doesn't help somebody grow. So ultimately, although it was a physical move, it had such a huge impact on the new functional manager. So I put my new functional manager in that office with her team, and I actually moved right out of that office, and I'm in a different office that is separate, still accessible, but separate. And so I no longer am privy to any of those conversations, because I either trust my manager or I don't. And if I don't, I have a different issue. And if I do, then I need to give her the opportunity to be confident in her direction and be the one source of information. My job is not to manage her team. Right. My job is to help her grow. And in order for her to do that, she needs to be able to make decisions on her own without the fear of my opinion on her shoulder.
Right. Yeah, you've got a lot of wisdom in there. It almost makes my last question to you a little bit maybe unnecessary, because you've shared so many little nuggets that are great pieces of advice for anyone at any level of leadership now, someone who either just wants to get better at their current role or advance to a higher level or be promoted. But what would is there are there any other pieces of wisdom that you'd pass along to someone who is maybe ambitious, wants to grow and excel, as I'm sure you've been in your career? You're kind of in this semi zen-like state. Not that you're taking your foot off the accelerator, but it's like you've really gotten to this mode where you're just trying to bring other people up and make them better. I just wondered, what about that ambitious, growth-oriented person? Any other words of wisdom you'd share with them on their journey up the ladder in leadership?
Yeah, and my favorite saying is be where your feet are. I've so often in even through my tenure with Movati, I've often been looking at the next position, or I've often thought about the next position, where my feet are in one position, but I'm already thinking or looking at the next position. And what that does is it doesn't allow me to shine in my current position. Leaders actually rise. If you've ever walked into, a store or somewhere, one of the first books I give any of my leaders is How to Lead Without a Title, because
Oh,
it was
that's
the
a good
thing that,
one.
yeah, it was the thing that I was so concerned about. 10 years ago when I first came into the organization is, well, I don't have a title, so nobody's going to listen to me. But leaders rise. Knowledge is such a powerful tool. It's actually your master tool. And when you don't understand something, ask. And when you don't know how something works, break it down until you do. And the people, if if you walk into a store or any organization, people will always tend to gravitate to the person who they believe has the answers, the person who is present, the person who is on the floor and available, and the person who delivers even the worst news with kindness and grace. You can deliver, very, very difficult conversations, and this was actually presented to me in such a way that, really anchored. Is that just present it with kindness and grace. You don't need to dislike somebody to, performance manage them. And so often, if you kind of take a look at and remove the personality and say, what are the characteristics here that I'm seeing that are requiring performance management? And take away the person. You may love the person as a person. You may go out and be happy to have lunch with them. But that doesn't mean that they're doing their job well. And it doesn't
Yes.
mean that they're not. And so you really have to, again, look back and be objective about those things, and say, is this person really good at their job? And how do I keep them motivated? Or do they have the skills and ability to become a leader? Because those are two different things. And I think often we take somebody who's really great at their job and who's a great task manager, and we say, oh my gosh, they're so great. They do so many good things for me. I'm going to make them into a leader. And that's not necessarily the best move for them. A lateral move can be a wonderful move. It's just you have to give, again, you have to go back and find out what makes that person shine, what motivates them, and then be able to develop that. And sometimes that's, a leader. But most of the time, if you sit and observe people, the person that everybody goes to find, try and find the answers is usually your next leader, regardless of what their title says, regardless of how long they've been in the position, regardless of how many, how much they get done in a day. That's your next leader. And
Oh,
just look for the person that
that's so
everybody goes.
awesome. But I love your I think it's good, because if you are ambitious, there is a tendency to always think about the next role and not focus on deliver on your existing role. That's probably good advice if you don't really love your existing role and you really want to go to another role, make sure you do what's necessary in your existing role to deliver and do that well. Make it known maybe that you're interested in something else, but focus on delivering on your current role. You've shared so many pieces of wisdom today, Karen. I just want to encourage people that if they are interested, for instance, in Movati Athletic, that they can go to movatiathletic.com. I think, Karen, the best way maybe to connect with you, if people want to do that, would be through LinkedIn. And search you out as Karen DiCarlo and do that. Karen, just thanks so much for, it's inspiring, I think, to me. And I've been in the leadership training business for three decades, more than three decades. But I think it's inspiring to anyone listening to the podcast to, you know, these are hard-fought lessons, hard-earned lessons, both from good things and difficult situations. So thank you so much for your wisdom, Karen.
Thank you, Greg. It's been an absolute honor. And, you know, for the people who are listening, I cannot speak highly enough about what you gave to me as a leader and a mentor. You know, what I took away from our time is just led me to where I am now. And just that sense of confidence and competence in where I am and really owning and wanting to be a master in my current role before I even consider or even look at another role. I love what I do. I am so honored and grateful for your guidance and also the ability to learn and be humble and grow.
Thank you so much. Now, again, for everyone else's benefit, remember, you can always like, follow, or comment on the podcast, or if you're looking at it as in video, you can do that. And you can, of course, reach out to us at uniquedevelopment.com. For now, we'll say thanks, Karen, and we'll sign off from the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast. See you next time.